Hello and welcome to the UK Personal Finance Show with Phil Anderson, the podcast designed to give you all the financial advice you'll ever need. This is episode 117, where in a moment, we're looking at why you should beware reading your pensions. That's in a moment, as I say, but please bear in mind, if you have a general financial query, you're in the right place because we have an enormous resource of free advice right here, and you can access it all simply through delving into our back catalogue of shows, because in our programmes to date, we featured loads of stuff: mortgages, investing, wills and powers of attorney, and heaps more. You name it, we've done it pretty much, and last week, we were looking at getting ready for 2023. Remember, we can drill down and focus on pretty much anything forensically. Find the UK Personal Finance Show with Phil Anderson on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll get us there. As I say, an enormous resource, all available for free. Find our previous shows after listening to this one and have a binge on what you need. While you're there, if you could rate and review us, for instance, you could tell us what we need to address to help you out, and follow the show, and then that way you'll get that episode when we record it next time. I'm John Mellis, and joining me as always, the star of our show, Phil Anderson. Hi, Phil.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good, thank you. Now, okay, we're on a show called Beware Reading Your Pensions, and unfortunately, I imagine as an option, it's probably becoming increasingly popular to do. As we mentioned before, finances are tightening for just about everyone. So if you are at the age where you can access your pension to help you out, it might not be the wisest thing to do, and we'll tell you why over the course of the show. But it's probably worth checking, though, before we go any further, Phil, what is the age you can access your pension from?
Yeah, usually for most people, 55 is the age that the earliest they can draw from their pension. So some people, like footballers, for example, years ago, they used to have like a protected pension age. So some of them might have had an earlier pension age. But for most people, the age at which they can do anything in regards to accessing their pensions, usually got to be 55. One thing that the government does plan, though, is they are looking to raise this to 57. At the moment, that's due to come in from 2028. If you've got what's called a defined benefit or sometimes final salary pension scheme, they would sort of fall under that. Often it depends on the scheme rules, so you might not be able to access that ones at 55. Some pension schemes, you're going to be older to get it. But if you've got personal pensions, usually you can start to access them from age 55.
Okay, so 54 and a half is the time to start looking for brand new shiny sports cars, or not. Let's take a look at the pros and cons of the entire process, Phil. Where do we start? You mentioned defined contribution pensions there. We may as well explain what one of those is first.
Yeah, the two main types of pensions that you come across, there's defined contribution and defined benefit. Now, a defined contribution pension, that would cover pensions such as personal pensions, your auto enrolment pensions would come under that, stakeholder pensions, although you don't really come across a huge amount of them these days. They never really took off probably in the way that the government had maybe hoped that they would take off. But usually these sort of pensions are ones that you've maybe paid money into or are paying money into. And sometimes it's one that your employer be adding into as well. A lot of people these days have got these auto enrolment pensions. And usually the way that works is you'll make a contribution, you'll get tax relief, and then your employer will pay in as well. So usually with these arrangements, once you reach the age of 55, you have got the option where you can take money out of your pension pot. But as we'll see going through this episode today, there's sometimes pitfalls and disadvantages to that as well. And quite staggeringly, government figures have showed that 500,000 people between March and May of this year, 500,000 people withdrew $3.6 billion from their pension pot. So a lot of money coming out there. But then for some folk, they'll be in retirement. They'll be looking to take that money out to live off. But then you have got ones that are maybe still working and they're thinking, right, I now need to kind of get some extra money from somewhere. Where can I try and get it? They'll look at maybe their personal pensions and say, right, can I withdraw from there? But good thing with this show, we can go through some of the advantages, but also it's good to give a balanced view and also look at like the sort of disadvantages of taking money out of your pension, especially before you've kind of retired properly as well.
Okay, 3.6 billion is a huge amount of money, isn't it?
I know.
There's defined contribution pensions, as you mentioned there, and there's defined benefit pensions. How do they differ?
Yeah, defined benefit pensions, they're a lot less common these days. With these kind of pensions, what would happen is that you would get paid a percentage of your salary when you retire. Now, some of these schemes were known as final salary pensions. That was what a lot of people would kind of know these by. And what happened there was when you retired, the income that was paid out was based on your final salary when you stopped work. So some people had, when they stopped work, it was based on maybe like their average earnings, or that sort of thing. But for a lot of people, it was based on their final salary. What you will find with a lot of these schemes, they did have the option where you could take a lump sum, but that would mean that you'd get paid less income. As I mentioned earlier, it all depends on the scheme as to what their rules allow, at what age they allow you to retire, can they let you sort of take the benefits early. So for today's show, we are more kind of concentrating on the options for people who are in the defined contribution pension. So looking more if you've got a workplace pension, an auto-enrollment scheme, personal pensions, that more that type of pension is really what we're kind of covering today.
Okay. And this 3.6 billion figure that we were talking about there, are there any kind of statistics that explain why people are getting to this age and dipping into the pot? I mean, is it because times are tight?
Yeah, what happened? I mean, a number of years ago, George Osborne, when he was a chancellor, introduced what was called pension freedoms, it was called. And that allowed people to be able to withdraw and have more flexibility taking money out of their pensions. Now, as I say, you'll get some folk that are retired and stopped working, so they'll have their pot invested. It's often known as drawdown or income release, where you leave your pot invested and you just draw out of it. So for many people, they'll be stopped work and thinking, right, I don't want to buy an annuity. That's something that gives you an income for the rest of your life. And they'll keep the money invested and they'll draw out of their pot. So you've got a lot of people in retirement who'd already been drawn out their pot. But like I say, you've got a lot of people who are still working. And we're getting a lot of inquiries just now from folk who are finding, just with things like the cost of living crisis, they maybe don't have as much money as what they need to get by. And they're thinking, right, where can I look at trying to supplement what I've got? So quite often they're thinking, right, can I start withdrawing money from a pension? And that's where we would look at the different options. Some people are like to try and help their family out. So they think, right, I would like to draw money out of my pension so I can help my son or daughter buy a house, or I'd like to help them because they might be struggling with the cost of living crisis at the moment as well. For some people, they want to draw money out of their pensions just to kind of enhance their lifestyle while they're still fit and healthy. I've seen some, though, take money out of their pensions to buy cars, to go on holiday. Like, the reasons really vary quite a lot from person to person, but it's something that we really are seeing it more and more over the last kind of few years. I would probably say some of that is down to things being a bit, like money being a bit tighter for people just now.
Now we'll get on to why you have to be super careful doing this, or why we should try and avoid doing it at all if we can. But for the time being, it might be worth asking, how do you go about accessing your pension in the first place? Because you'll never have done it before, will you?
Yeah, that's it. When you actually come to, like, do something with your pension pot, so once you're over the age of 55, at that point, there's a number of options. You can take out, most defined contribution pensions allow you to take out a tax-free lump sum from your pension. Usually, this is up to 25% of what your pension pot is worth. Now, again, you have got some older pensions where people might have a bigger entitlement to that. I've seen a few tradesmen in the past. There's a company called B&CE. They've actually got some pensions where you can take like 100% of your fund as a tax-free lump sum, but ones like that are very rare. But again, what a financial advisor would do is they would check all this sort of things. But in the main, most people can tend to take out 25% of their pension pot as a tax-free cash. Now, many people will take this out as a one-off lump sum, but you can actually draw this over a period of time if that's better for you. So if you didn't need all the cash in one go, you might think, right, I've got a 25% lump sum, but I'll take a portion of that, maybe 5% of that for the next 5 years, and then that adds up to your 25%. So if you wanted to maybe go part-time working, or your earnings were going to go down slightly, you might think, right, I'll do that until I like stop working, and then you would have your pension to kind of draw on at that point in time. Now, you can withdraw more than the 25%. However, anything that you take out above that, it's taxed as income. So Let's say you were a higher rate taxpayer. If you're paying 40% tax, if you draw money out over and above the tax-free cash element, you're then going to be paying 40 or 45% tax on that. So again, when you come to look at drawing money out of your pensions, it's a really good time to sit down with a financial advisor, because they would also look at things like tax planning. Because what I've seen some people do, I've had some folk that have maybe got small pension pots, and they'll come to us and say, right, I want to withdraw this pension pot here. But you might say, and look, let's take some of it out now, because you've maybe got an immediate need for cash at the moment. But quite often you'll maybe say to them, look, rather, if you take it all out now, you'll pay more tax. So let's look at maybe taking a portion out now, some out next year, some out the year after that. It's really a sort of good tax planning is half the kind of battle when it comes to that sort of stage in life. And if you do want money out, there's a couple of things you can do. I mentioned you can take financial advice. You've also got access to a service called PensionWise. Now, what they do is they offer, instead of offering actual advice, they use the term guidance. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to guide you through the different options that are available. So they would explain to you what's an annuity, what's drawdown, what's the pros and cons of each. The one thing that they won't do is actually give you a recommendation as to what providers to use or what funds to invest your money in. But it's a good service that's there. PensionWise is free, so it's something that allows people to speak to somebody just to get some sort of general information and see how it all works. But as I say, one thing they don't actually give you is what you would class as advice, and that's where you have to go to a financial advisor. What financial advisors can do if you're in this position is they can advise you on the best course of action for your particular needs, but they can also go through the implications of withdrawing money from your pension pots early as well. And as I say, a financial advisor will also look at all the various options that's out there. I would say that speaking to an independent financial advisor is usually best, because they've got access to the whole marketplace, so they can look at all the various providers that's out there to get the best one that fits with your needs. So again, I'm always kind of a great advocate in people taking financial advice. And certainly when you're looking to withdraw money from your pensions, it's a great time to speak to a financial advisor at that point in time.
Absolutely. Now, something that we focus on increasingly in all walks of financial life, in all walks of life in general, really, is the work of scammers. How do they get involved, particularly in this sort of thing, Phil?
Oh, I tell you, scammers are just, they'll do anything to try and get money off people. My partner actually had in, she had an old credit card that she hadn't used in years. She picked up her mail from her old address, and somebody had used just a small transaction, maybe like 30 quid or something. It showed it was being down in London in August, and she wasn't even in London in August. Yeah. So scammers, they just find all sorts of ways to try and like do people out of money. Luckily for her, it's only a small amount. The company's investigating it at the moment. But people who are, you've always to beware of scammers. And if somebody is getting contacted by someone offering them the chance to access their pension before the age of 55, you'll often find that in a lot of cases that may be a scammer. If someone's desperate for cash, they're kind of vulnerable. So they're kind of a lot more vulnerable to scams and scammers, because if they think, oh yeah, this is a solution to help me get some money, it really is. It's sad that people go to this lengths to try and steal money, but you get what's called pension liberation schemes. And especially if someone's under the age of 55, if you're doing one of these sort of schemes, there's really hefty tax charges. And also, in a lot of cases, people will end up with hardly anything at all, or maybe nothing if it's a scam as well. So really beware if anyone's saying, look, you can access your pension pots before sort of age 55, you really do need to be careful and watch for that.
Okay. Take me through the pros and cons of this one final time then, Phil. This episode's called Beware Raiding Your Pensions, but let's be positive and look at the sort of flip side first. What are the benefits of dipping into it?
Yeah, so as I say, if you're over the age of 55 with a defined contribution pension, you can access your cash. And I suppose one of the good things is you've got the sort of flexibility. So if you're going into what's called drawdown, so that's where you'll maybe take out your tax-free lump sum and leave the money invested. I suppose some of the advantages of that is that it gives you more flexibility and choice. It gives you, like, you can choose where you want your money invested. So you might think, right, I'm happy to take more risks. I maybe don't want so much risk. You've got that sort of flexibility there. But one of the other good things is you can choose how much you want to take out. So unlike an annuity, which will pay you an income over a set period of time, you might think, right, I want to take more out while I'm fit and healthy. And then you might think, well, as I get older, I'm likely to be less active, so I won't need as much at that point in time. So that's another kind of advantage. And another sort of advantage of these drawdown pensions is that the money can be left to who you want on death. And at the moment, it's currently free of inheritance tax. That changes once you get over the age of 75. But again, your financial advisor would be able to keep you right with all of that sort of things as well.
Okay, and the entire purpose of this episode, what are the cons?
I'd say that there's probably quite a number of disadvantages as well. And the more money you withdraw from your pension pot now, the less you're going to have, like, at a later stage, especially if you're doing it before you actually stop working and retire. Because let's say you're 55 and you think, right, I'm going to take a lump sum out of my pension. You take that lump sum out. I mean, it might be 10 years or more until you actually stop working. Whereas you've made, let's say you take 20 grand out now, that 20 grand that you've taken out over a 10-year period potentially could double in value. So you've depleted your pot, not only by the money you're taking out now, but by any future growth on that money as well. So you've definitely got to be wary. And like I say, we're really busy with people looking to take money out of their pensions. But yeah, it's great that they can do that, but you've got to think of the kind of longer-term picture as well, because the more you take out at an early stage, the less you're going to have at some stage in the future. Other disadvantages of kind of looking at drawdown is you could run out of money, especially if you live to a good old age. Or again, if you withdraw too much too quickly, you could, like, totally run out of cash. Another thing with drawdown, because the money's invested, your fund value and retirement income, it can be hit by poor investment performance. As I mentioned earlier, if you're taking out big sums, you could be left with some pretty hefty tax bills to pay as well. Another thing that could happen, I mean, tax positions change, so the tax situation could change in the future. You would hope that we'd be given notice on different budgets and things if that was to happen. But if you start taking out money other than they call it a pension commencement lump sum. That's just a fancy name for your tax-free cash. So if you take out more than your tax-free cash, that also limits how much you can then pay into a pension. So again, if you're in your kind of late 50s or early 60s and still working, it might be that you're in a workplace pension scheme where you've got money going in. And there's something, it's called the money purchase annual allowance. If you draw out more than the 25% tax-free lump sum, the annual amount that you can contribute to a pension falls to just £4,000. So again, it's really important to take financial advice if you are in that sort of position. And as I said earlier, financial advisors, they can recommend products, but they can also help with things like the tax planning as well. And that money purchase annual allowance, that's something that they would be able to explain a wee bit more of how all that sort of thing works and how it would impact you as well.
I tell you, this episode is a little bit like the Indiana Jones of the financial world, you know, where you're going through that last crusade element and you're trying to dodge and jump and weave and get out of the way of things. There's a lot to take in here. We'll get on to our quote of the week in just a second. But first, let's take a look at how this week's topic has affected your own life, Phil, in one way or another. Our subject, as you know, is beware raiding your pension. I don't think you're anywhere near old enough to be doing that yet anyway, but what have you got on that subject from your own experience?
I say, for me, I'm 46, so I've still got a bit of time to go before I can access my pension pots. It looks as though the earliest I'll be able to access mine will be age 57. We did have there was a chap contacted one of our advisors in the office just recently. They'd already taken their 25% tax-free lump sum, but they were adamant that they hadn't. Some people get confused, and then you've got other people that know fine well and are just kind of chancing it. But with that person, they'd already taken the 25% tax-free lump sum. But to the advisor here, they're like, no, I've definitely not had my tax-free lump sum. I'm looking to take my 25% tax-free lump sum again. But you want to get away with that, because the companies know when they've got to report like how much people have sort of drawn out of the pensions and stuff. So it just, sometimes it's people chancing it. Other times it's people that didn't understand how it all works. But I just thought that was quite an interesting one that I heard from one of our advisors just recently.
Yeah, what is this? Now, Phil is really keen on trying to help you with your queries. So if ever you want to email a question to us, please do. And as always, we can ask them anonymously if you prefer. Let's get on to this week's contact details coming up in just a second. I'll give it to you after these. Hi, Phil and John. Oh, look, Phil, my mum's got in touch. I'm not sure if you can help me on this one, but I thought I'd ask anyway. It's to do with cars. I'm at an age where I want to keep driving, but I'm not sure I can afford a new car or whether I'll get full use out of it before I have to stop driving for health reasons. Is there any financial sense in leasing a car, or am I just throwing money away and better to have an asset to sell if I can no longer drive?
You know, it's a good question. It's one of those ones, it's like, right, what's the best way to go? And certainly, like, a short-term lease is something to give consideration to. I actually had quite a bad experience myself doing that just recently. I leased a car on a sort of short-term lease, put one back, and had ordered another one. And they delivered that to me, but I got charged, it was probably about £1,500 in repair costs for the one that went back. And there was, like, scuffs on the wing mirror. So I knew there would be a few little bits to kind of pay for, but certainly wasn't as much as what I would sort of have expected. So when I got the bill for that, I phoned up the company that it was went through, and I said to them, I said, look, I want to put back the car that you've just delivered. But I had to give them, I think it was the earliest it could go back was 3 months. And even that car, put it back after the 3 months. And again, the bill for that was very similar. It was about £1,500. Certainly over a grand in repair costs. When the guy picked it up, I thought, that's great, any damage at all. And they tried to say that there was like someone on the wheels, and I was like, they're just at it. So we've actually got a complaint in about that at the moment, but that was one of the pitfalls that we can experience just by doing like a short-term kind of lease. But there's so many different things that you can do with a car. You've got like hire purchase arrangements, contract hire. We did actually do an episode on like ways to finance your kind of car purchase. I suppose one thing with cars is it's usually an asset that tends to depreciate over time. So it's trying to just weigh up all the options and see what's going to be kind of most suitable for you, I guess.
That lady there talking about how she doesn't know whether she'll be able to keep driving that car if she was to buy a new one.
Yeah.
I guess when you're talking about the short-term lease, that's the sort of thing that's going to bother. I don't know. It's the sort of thing that bothers you more when you get older. You don't want the hassle.
So I know.
It's maybe something to consider for her in that case.
Honestly, when I put the last car back, I thought, I've had it 3 months. It's a brand new car. No damage on it at all. I was over the miles. I knew I'd have like an excess charge on the mileage. I can't remember how many miles I was allowed to do, but so I knew I'd have to pay because of that, which I was fine with. But when they tried to come away with, like, it was well over £1,000, I like tried to say it was damage to the wheels. I was like, that's just nonsense, because I was really careful in that car. I would never be up mounting curbs or anything. I was always careful when I was parking. I actually paid more per month for, I think it was like an extra 20, 30 quid a month for some sort of insurance. So if there was ever any damage, it would get paid to get fixed. So it's like, if there was damage, I would have used that insurance to pay for anything. But in my eyes, there was nothing. So I really did feel quite ripped off about that. And like I say, we've got a complaint in at the minute. That'll go to the financial ombudsman for them to kind of sort out. But that's just maybe something to be wary of with these short-term car leases.
Yeah, absolutely. Best of luck with that. No doubt your joyriding career has come to an abrupt end. Next up, here's one about life insurance, this time from Derek in Kintore, who says, hi, Phil. I'm looking at changing job and moving into a situation where I'll be working a lot more with harnesses. and in real terms, I suppose potentially endangering myself more on a daily basis. Is there any way I could be making my life insurance void by accepting the job, or do I have to change policy specifically to undertake it?
Life insurance is underwritten at the time that you take it out, so usually your cover will remain valid and just continue as it was. What I would say is it is probably good practice just to speak to your insurer, just to notify them of any changes. But I think it would probably be likely that the policy wouldn't be impacted in any way, and the cover would still be in place there.
Okay. I would just say as well, before you get in touch with a question, you might want to take a look at our back catalogue, because we've covered a fair few topics so far, and we might have touched on what you're interested in. Like Phil mentioned there, we have done one on cars in the past. So if that's useful to you, then you might want to look it up. I'm John Mellis. Thank you for joining us for episode 117 of the UK Personal Finance Show with Phil Anderson. If you feel you need a helping hand with anything we've been discussing or anything else of a monetary matter, find Phil for Finance. Search Phil Anderson Financial Services online or join the Facebook group for the show. Search Personal Finance Community. That's Personal Finance Community on Facebook. Phil's on Twitter and LinkedIn too, or why not email Phil a question he can answer on a future show. His address is phil@philandersonfinancial.co.uk. That's phil@philandersonfinancial.co.uk. Send him your question and Phil could be answering it in an upcoming podcast, as I say. And please be assured we won't use your real name if that's what you prefer. Remember, if you found this useful, please rate and recommend us, and please follow us on Apple or wherever you get your podcast. Then you'll get us every week with the info you want when you need it. You'll get all the links you need on Phil's social media. Good luck with your money. Phil's doing his best to help make that cash go further. We'll see you next time, and thanks for listening.
Thanks very much, John. Just also like to say to our listeners, a very Merry Christmas when it comes. This is our last show going out before Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
The next show would be usually due on Boxing Day. We're going to take a break for a week, so the next one will be out on the 2nd of January. But I'd like to wish you a Merry Christmas as well, John, and thanks for all your help over this year as well.
Oh, and to you. Merry Christmas, Phil.
Thanks very much.